Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to In the Lab with Hoopsology. It's been a minute, feels like it's been a while, but it's only been like 2 weeks, I think, since we released one of these. We've had a lot of great guest interviews. Hope you have enjoyed those. But first and foremost, I'm your host, Matt Thomas, joined by my best friend and co-host, Justin Goodrum. Justin, how you been, man?
Been doing pretty good. I'm just getting ready for the home stretch. Like we mentioned earlier, a little bit of a dead zone after the All-Star break, but things are picking up with March Madness, and then it's playoff time in the NBA. So an exciting time to be a basketball fan for sure.
Absolutely. We had LeBron cross over into a new untouched milestone that we'll discuss. We have kind of an interesting update to the MVP debate. You know, now that Joel Embiid is out of the picture there, we'll talk about that. Maybe mention Jokic, maybe some others too. We'll talk about some contenders and pretenders as we start inching our way to the postseason. Hard to believe we're almost three quarters of the way through the season. And then also on the women's basketball side, Caitlin Clark making a lot of news this week and even some controversy around, should she be professional? Should she go collegiate, stay there for a little while? So we'll unpack that a little bit as well. And before we get into that, Justin, and I'm sorry to frame it this way, but I wanted to get your thoughts on the Bulls. So even though maybe it's not the most relevant news, let's touch on actually the Bulls and the Rockets, both kind of irrelevant news lately. I'll throw it to you for any Bulls update you have for the next minute or so.
Yeah, I'll be brief. So Patrick Williams, who plays for the Bulls, suffered a season-ending foot injury. So he's gone. And, you know, it's kind of same old with Chicago. They're 29-32. They've won one game, but their schedule's kind of a mix in terms of playing the Wizards and the Pacers and the Clippers. They seem to play low to their competition and seem to really step up to the occasion when they're playing kind of the top teams in either conference. So I'm very curious to see what's going to happen at the end of the season. But, you know, I think the Bulls, they'll make it competitive. They got enough players to at least make things interesting. But in terms of making any significant playoff run, I think that's out of the question.
Gotcha. Yeah, and on the Rockets side of things, you know, they came out of the gates quickly this season. That was exciting to see, got the fan base all riled up, myself included a little bit there, but come back to earth in the last 2 months, really. 26-34, is currently sitting 12th in the Western Conference, really looking highly doubtful that they'll even scratch the play-in tournament, but their over-under this year was set at 31.5 games. And it looks like they're right on pace to either just break it or just miss it. So Vegas did a pretty good job, it turns out, with the Rockets is what it's looking like. We also lost some young talent too. Tari Eason had season-ending surgery. So really, maybe a little bit of regret, at least on my end, that we didn't trade Jalen Green. I know a lot of people don't feel that way, and I'm okay with waiting on young talent as well. But it's looking like the season is going to go exactly as Vegas predicted for the Rockets. So my condolences to both our teams and fans of them, although it could certainly be worse. You know, I won't dunk on other teams right now, but there are other teams who are in worse spots than that. So we can always keep that in mind. Let's move on to some relevant news that we were alluding to earlier, Justin. And on March 2nd, we had LeBron James cross into the 40K point realm. He is the first and only basketball player to ever do that. I mean, it speaks for itself. Obviously, this is an impressive milestone, a testament to LeBron's durability in many ways. But Justin, give me some initial thoughts, you know, when you first heard the news, and I know we've already talked about LeBron breaking Kareem's record. What does this add to it for you?
Yeah, not too much. It's a significant milestone for sure. No one in the history of the league has ever done this, so it's pretty significant. They were playing the Nuggets. Ironically, whenever kind of a big milestone happens, it seems like they're playing Denver. So I think Denver did end up winning that game too. So overall, a pretty huge accomplishment. It speaks to LeBron's longevity and really just how amazing of a player he is. I don't think once he retires, and I think unfortunately until he just passes away, I don't think there'll be, I don't think a lot of basketball fans will understand the gravity of just how good he really is. I think he's in that GOAT conversation, but if you just take consider, if you consider the versatility of his game in terms of just his passing ability, his basketball IQ, and his ability to score at a basketball, it's quite incredible. And I think to celebrate that milestone was pretty appropriate. I know there's a lot of luminaries and celebrities that were in the building for that. So it's pretty cool to see. But, you know, I think not too much to add, just considering we celebrated as him breaking the NBA all-time scoring record over Kareem, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, it's ultimately a testament to his durability and his, you know, his dedication to his fitness, and also a whole heck of a lot of good luck too, that he hasn't had, you know, he's been injured, no doubt, but he hasn't had like the Achilles tear that Kobe suffered. And, you know, of course we all hope that never happens, and that he, as with any athlete, they can keep going and make that decision for themselves when they want to hang it up. I don't share the same sentiments in the GOAT debate as maybe a lot of people do, but it's undoubtable. I mean, LeBron, it's a super impressive career. I mean, that's inarguable. So I don't think I have anything else to add. Anything else to add to the 40K milestone?
I don't. I mean, the next storyline with LeBron and his career is, you know, with his son, I think he's staying another year. So that's kind of the sweepstakes of, you know, he wants to play with his son. So he's currently at USC. So I think that's kind of the latest with LeBron in terms of the next phase of his career. So,
yeah. And I hate to say this because I root for Bronny too. I want him to do well. He's not NBA ready at the moment, but there is enough there to where someone might be willing to draft Bronny just to lure LeBron James over for a season or two.
Agreed.
So I do really wonder how all of that is going to play out. And of course, you know, maybe Bronny can develop into an NBA player in another couple of years in college ball, but that also then, you know, to get LeBron and Bronny playing together, LeBron's got to hold out a lot more. And right now he's certainly is able to play NBA basketball. He can hang around if he wants to. And I can't imagine, you know, the Lakers moving off of him or anything like that. So he's kind of calling the shots as it has been in his career, because he's been able to play at such an elite level for such a long time. Another element, I'll just add one more thing to this and then let's move on. I don't know if you saw the Nike ad, you probably did, where it showed like his counting stats in terms of points, rebounds, and assists. It added it up and then said equal one, you know, obviously implying like LeBron is the GOAT, which I think is really interesting given that Jordan brand is there, given, you know, Kobe, of course, had that relationship with Nike. So to do this counting stats and then equal one, I think is a curious move from the Nike advertising department in some ways, but of course it's getting a lot of attention. Did you have any thoughts on that ad?
Not really. I mean, there is an ad for, we'll talk about Caitlin Clark later, but they did this similar thing celebrating her accomplishment. So I don't really put too much stock in those ads, to be honest. I mean, they're kind of whatever. So.
Yep, just kind of some marketing materials, yeah. Sell more product. So let's move on to, you know, players that are playing, no offense to LeBron, but at the very top level of the league, and get into this MVP discussion. Looking at the stats, you have, you know, StatMuse here has an interesting, you know, MVP question about, is it between these two? I would actually add another person into the discussion. We can talk about that. And you look at the statistics for like Jokic, those shooting splits, the rebounds that he does, the success of the Denver Nuggets under him, and also the performances that Jokic has put on since the All-Star break, and really since Joel Embiid's unfortunate injury has sidelined him from the MVP contention. And I think it's still Jokic's award at this point in the season. Luka, very impressive stats. I just don't know that we're getting enough team success for Dallas for my liking to include him in an MVP discussion. I mean, Luka always has great counting stats each year. So that's never been an issue for him. What do you think of where we are in the MVP race right now, Justin? And I guess, you know, let me know maybe your front runner for the moment. And then outside of Jokic and Luka, do you have anyone you could see contending for this award?
So I would say that there's two guys. I don't think the Joker's gonna get it just because of the whole three-peat thing. I just think there's a lot of biases. I don't really understand it. Just pick the guy who's the best player of the season.
Even though he didn't three-peat?
Well, just, I guess, would that be three MVPs?
Correct.
Total. Yeah. Just, I guess, what that means. There's three MVPs total in his rep, in his trophy case. So I think because of that, there's always these biases that might take place. First, I got two guys. I got Jason Tatum and then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Those are two guys. And especially if, you know, SGA, if the Thunder, I mean, the West is razor thin. I mean, if the Thunder get that first seed, I mean, and he is just killing it with, you know, seven straight 30-point games. I mean, that is going to be really hard to beat. I hate these biases. I hate that, well, he's from a small market. He's, you know, Jokic, you know, he has, you know, two prior MVPs. Give somebody others a chance. It's just ridiculous. Just pick the best player. So absolutely. I think with SGA, I think that's going to, that is going to hurt him, unfortunately, and be in a smaller market. But if all things were equal, I'd put SGA over the Joker there, just slightly. And even Jason Tatum, too. I think it's between those three guys, in my opinion. I think, like you said, with Luka, I think the team success, it's so close. I think especially with the offensive firepower being at such a high level, I think you have to factor in team success. And I think the Mavericks are kind of on that next tier of teams. So I think he just misses the cut for me.
Gotcha. Give me – so I hear a lot of people, you know, discussing different candidates, and it seems like most media that I see just outright dismisses Tatum because the Celtics, you know, they're a loaded team, whatnot. They're so clearly the best team in the East, but obviously Tatum is a big reason for that.
Yeah.
Give me like your distilled Jason Tatum case for MVP from what you've seen. Why do you place him, you know, in that top three tier?
Yeah. I just think his leadership ability, and I think you can tell, like, honestly, between him and Jaylen Brown, like, you know, who's the top dog in that tandem? I think it's Jason Tatum. And I don't know. I just personally think that he is the leader of that team. And overall, again, like you were mentioning earlier, I don't like the biases of just like, you know, even though Kristaps is on that team and Jaylen Brown, I just like Tatum as just that, as just the front runner of the Celtics success. Again, this is not a postseason award. This is not a,
right,
you know, who you think is going to win the title. This is a regular season award. And I really think he's in contention for that. And you take a look at the, you know, MVP odds here, and this is of March 4th. I mean, he's fifth on that list. So that, like you're saying, it's very much like a disrespect from that. But I think a lot of people, even Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, are saying that, you know, Tatum should be in the running as a front runner, and especially with, you know, we're talking about recent Celtics performances. I mean, they destroyed the Warriors. I mean, they embarrassed them. I mean, the Warriors are not a bottom barrel team in the Western Conference. I mean, they destroyed them. So I think that plays into how, you know, Tatum should be considered in that top ranking.
Yeah, no, I like that. And, you know, it used to be back in my day to go there with it. It used to be that, you know, you had to be basically a top three seeded team.
Yeah.
If you were going to be in the MVP conversation, like, even though Luka has these great counting stats that we brought up, it's laughable in a way to include him in the MVP discussion because the Mavericks currently are sitting in the eighth seed you know, so that almost is like an instant disqualifier. Remember, there was a lot of controversy. I believe it was 2016 when Westbrook won the MVP. He was having triple doubles and putting up numbers and stats, no doubt. But some people were very against him winning the MVP because the Thunder were, I believe, the sixth seed that year in the playoffs. You're right. It's a regular season award, but I like more of this discussion of like how the team is doing and how that player is contributing to that team. And so I think, I mean, bare minimum, you got to be a 1A on your team to be in the MVP discussion. And Tatum clearly is the 1A on the best team in the Eastern Conference. And you could argue, at least by the record, certainly, but you could argue overall the best team in the NBA as well.
Yeah, agreed.
So I think that's valid to include him in the discussion. I'm definitely not as dismissive as others that I've seen. For me, Jokic is still the front runner, but we're going to have to see how the Nuggets finish out the season. And much like last year, if he's going to, you know, he's by default kind of aloof about winning individual awards, which I respect as well, because I think he wants that focus to be about the team. But that can hurt you in MVP discussions and getting voters on your side to vote for you to win that award. And last thing I have is I just want to say, I totally agree with you mentioning SGA. That was my other person I was alluding to. I think not only you mentioned the 30-point game streak, but he's also doing a fantastic job on the defensive side of the ball too, which often, you know, one of my common gripes is that it's so overlooked in the MVP discussion and in basketball in general in the modern era, unfortunately. So SGA checks those boxes for me. And I want him to be, you know, a top three vote finisher, especially if the Thunder manage to pull out the top seed in the Western Conference with how young they are. I think that's super impressive. And he's the clear leader of that team.
Yeah, no, agreed. And some odds from FanDuel real quick.
Yeah.
SGA is +230. He's right behind the Joker. So I think that's pretty good. And really Luka's +800. So that tells you the respect they have for SGA, which is pretty surprising to me. I just thought there'd be kind of like a bit, even though his stats were impressive and I'm for him being MVP. I'm glad he's getting the love because I could easily be like, well, he's not, you know, a stab, you know, all these BS different metrics. It seems like he's getting that respect. So that's good to see, at least from a Vegas perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving into a discussion on pretenders and contenders at this point in the season, you know, as we move towards the three-quarter mark of the season, or maybe we've already crossed it for a few teams in the league here, wanted to take a look at the standings with you and get your thoughts on these kind of new kids on the block that are at the top of these conferences or in contention here. So looking out west, I think the general consensus is that the title contenders, the real contenders that are there that people would have no issue saying, or almost no issue, the Nuggets, who we've been mentioning. I think a lot of people now, probably the majority, in spite of our hesitancy, Justin, I think a lot of people and people we've talked to do think the Clippers are a contender, even though I think you and I say, we got to see it in the playoffs. We got to see them do it. But just in terms of like popular opinion, and then I think the other one, since they've had postseason success, even though they're very new look this year, is the Phoenix Suns. People expect them to be sort of in that contention. Ideally, of course, you'd like to see them move up beyond the sixth seed, but the teams I want to hone in on, because I've seen a lot of posts like, why won't you pick this team as a contender? Or, you know, give me a reason this team won't contend. And I'm talking about two teams here, both the Minnesota Timberwolves, who currently at the moment we're recording, although it's back and forth, the Timberwolves sit at first in the West, followed very closely, only a half game behind, by the Oklahoma City Thunder. Should also mention the Nuggets are tied with that record with the Thunder and could also move into first place soon here. But point being, between the Thunder and the Timberwolves, we saw a little bit of Timberwolves in the postseason last year. We haven't seen this OKC iteration in the postseason yet. who do you trust more at this point if you had to pick between one of them to move far into the postseason? And neither of them might, depending on matchups, understanding that.
It's so tough. I think due to just the bottom of the rankings there, I don't have too much faith. And I think what's with Inside the NBA was right on the money. I think Shaq and Charles, I think they made a good point of like the mainstream media propping up the Lakers and Warriors. I think they pose a good challenge for the top two teams, certainly. But I just think they don't have enough firepower to really pose a big enough threat. But there is a concern. It is the playoffs. And especially with the Thunder, things are just different, and you're dealing, it's kind of like a whole new ball game. I think we've seen where when you have LeBron and Anthony Edwards, when they don't care about losing games at home. I mean, it doesn't matter if they're going on the road. Same thing with the Warriors. It's, you know, it's a clutch situation. It's close. There's pressure. And you have a lot of these teams that are fairly new to have limited to no playoff experience. That gets scary. I think that is a factor. And to just dismiss, just to say the Warriors and Lakers, yeah, you know, they're having a bad regular season and they're old and past their prime. That still is a factor for these younger teams. It just is. So I feel comfortable more picking the Thunder. I think SGA is going to be that leader. I think he's going to thrive in that environment. I think the Timberwolves really make me nervous, to be honest, in a playoff scenario. So I'm going to go with the Thunder. I really, like you were saying, with SGA and his defensive mindset. But I'd be lying if I'm not nervous about both these teams facing, sure, you know, veteran teams there. I think as long as those two teams avoid, you know, if you're looking at the standings here, you know, if they end up playing like the Kings or Mavericks, I think they'll be fairly safe. And even the Suns, I think that's fine. But again, just depending on if they drop, if, you know, I really think, honestly, 6 through 10, honestly, I think is interchangeable. So even with the Pelicans, to be honest. So I think the top four teams are safe, but honestly, 5 through really, I would say 10, I could see interchangeably. So quite honestly, as long as, you know, the Timberwolves and Thunder stay away from the Lakers and Warriors in the first round, I think they'll be fairly safe, but that is danger. I mean, LeBron is not past his prime. I think he's still, when in a playoff scenario, if he's healthy, that is just a dangerous matchup. This is that's scary in terms of 7 games. So I would lean Thunder over the Timberwolves, but I think I feel uneasy with both of them playing either the Warriors or Lakers, even though I don't think either team was going to be able to really make a significant run.
Yeah, I like your answer. I like your pick of the Thunder. I think just simply for the fact that they have SGA, that they're young, long, athletic, I think is good. It is concerning that they don't really have a backup center option. So, you know, if Chet Holmgren gets in foul trouble, that's basically it for their center play. That could be a big problem, maybe more of a fatal flaw in the playoffs compared to what the Timberwolves have, which I think is an unsurety of what to do when it comes to like clutch time. Like, I don't know that Anthony Edwards has that all figured out just yet. And you've got the postseason questions of Gobert being out on the floor at the end of games and if that'll work or not when things are really close. So far, obviously, been working great for them in the season. I don't know how that's going to look in the playoffs. You would expect at least one of those two teams to get past the first round, undoubtedly, especially if they have home court advantage here. So really great opportunity for both of them and for the Timberwolves to like prove themselves, because they gave more of a challenge to the Nuggets than the Lakers did. You could even make the case, maybe they gave them a little bit more of a challenge than the Suns, depending on how you look at it, but could be an interesting postseason for the Timberwolves. And I feel like they're the team certainly that has a lot more to prove with the timeline on where they are with OKC. I think it's just a feel good postseason, and unless it just looks really bad as the one seed and they get, like, you know, swept or knocked out pretty handily in that first round. I think, like you said, if it's Lakers or Warriors, even though I think they should be able to beat those teams, yeah, I think people give them more of a pass because of the names attached to it.
Agreed.
Let's move right into the Eastern Conference, looking at the other side of things. I think it goes without saying, you can disagree with me if you like, Justin, but I think the Celtics are the title favorites at the moment. And I think Milwaukee is still considered by many, in spite of the flaws, in spite of the coaching chaos and all that that we've covered on the show, I think they are still a favorite as a title contender in the Eastern Conference. So other teams there, and I'm going to give you more teams to pick from since the Eastern Conference is a little bit more muddled than the Western Conference, or maybe just has less legitimate contenders. So give me the team you trust or are at the moment trusting. If we can't pick the Bucks and the Celtics, we've got the Knicks, Cavs, 76ers, or Heat I've got written down here. Who feels like the most legitimate threat in your mind?
Oh, boy. So I think if Embiid is healthy, I think that that is the 76ers.
And that's
it plays into health. And then basically you take a look at the 76ers and the Knicks because they've been hammered with injuries, and it's including a scary knee injury scare with Jalen Brunson. So that's also a question mark too. And even with the Cavaliers, you know, Donovan Mitchell, he's missed a ton of games. I mean, there's a report that came out. He's only played 47 games and he has 22 games remaining. And he's already set to miss three games. And I mean, there's an issue of him being all NBA if he continues to miss games. He has a left knee bruise. So to me, all these teams are dealing with a tons of injuries. So it's really hard. So I'm picking the Heat. I mean, the Heat deal with a lot of adversity. The Heat, I don't think, really care where they matter in the seeding. They've been in every possible scenario. And I think they're an extremely scary team to face. They're the scariest team in the NBA to play in the playoffs, I would say, in a seven-game series just because of their coaching and Jimmy Butler. So to me, I would say I would trust the Heat out of those teams for a myriad of reasons, including adversity as well. But if everything's equal, if all the teams are healthy, I would pick the 76ers first. Then I would go probably, I'd probably go 76ers, Knicks, Heat, and then Cavaliers. But, you know, laying out what's going on right now, I pick the Heat.
I think that's reasonable. You know, I want so badly to pick the Knicks.
Yeah, me too.
But like Coach Nick, recent guest and friend of the show, said, you know, there's a lot there, but you just need to see them all healthy together to figure it out, you know, and we haven't gotten that time to see it. And if I'm picking in like a chess match between Coach Tibbs and Coach Spo, and really honestly between Coach Spo and any of these coaches, I'm picking Coach Spo at the moment. I mean, shout out to Nick Nurse in Philadelphia, who's a great coach as well, but man, I can't pick away from the Heat given what we've seen. And also the Heat did it directly against the Knicks. They kind of clowned the Knicks last postseason. Granted, the Knicks didn't have OG. And the Knicks kind of clowned the Cavaliers last postseason in the first round before they met the Miami Heat. So just by way of that and not trusting Embiid's health in the moment and how he's going to look when he gets back, I got to pick the Heat as well. I think that's a smart pick. I mean, at a certain point in time, the Heat will get a little less lucky, you know, unfortunately for them, I think, but I can't say with 100% confidence. I think that year is right now. So I want to pick the Knicks really badly, but I'm going to pick the Heat as well. Long story short, one more topic to get to here, Justin, and maybe the most fascinating topic of them all with what we're looking at. Caitlin Clark, who has taken the college basketball, not just women's, but college basketball world in general, by storm here, declared earlier this week, correct me if I'm wrong, but for the WNBA, once this season is over,
correct.
She gave a really nice heartfelt statement to the fans of Iowa, but just kind of, I think to nobody's surprise, said, you know, basically it's time to go to the WNBA. We get reports earlier today that Fox is reportedly considering an NIL deal to convince Caitlin Clark to stay in college, which I think brings up, I don't know how legitimate this news is. I'll say right offhand. I don't know if this could be like some sort of potential like competitive balance lawsuit or something like that, you know, against Fox by the WNBA or otherwise. I don't know. Caitlin Clark is going to be eligible for the draft. Ultimately, the decision is hers if she wants to enter it or not, or stay in college and keep getting paid with these NIL deals. And look, to counter that, of course, like she'll get endorsement deals when she goes to the WNBA. I don't think she's going to be hurting for money, even if her WNBA salary is a pay cut from her current NIL. I think she'll have endorsements and opportunities like that. She'll be making money. But I see this from another angle, Justin, where I see what she's doing in the college sports record books at the moment. And part of me thinks, you know, you're going to be making bank either way, whether you stay or whether you go. You only have this short amount of time in college. Like you could stay through here, still be paid very, very well, and set records that might not be touched for lifetimes to come, potentially. I find that prospect very interesting. That would be, if I were, and I'm not, but if I were trying to convince Caitlin Clark to stay, I think I would take that angle of you could be the most storied by the numbers collegiate athlete of all time. But you know, it's hard when you consider like the prospect of like, hey, I'm just focusing on a professional career anyway, and it's right here. I can go into that right now and do amazing, most likely year one. So Justin, what would you say if you're advising Caitlin Clark, or just in general, what do you think she should do? Granted, you know, we think she should do whatever she wants to do ultimately.
Yeah, so a lot. So I'll try to keep my points concise here. So number one, I don't understand the argument of how she takes a pay cut going to the WNBA. She keeps her sponsors as a pro. So I don't really understand. I mean, from what I read, if there's like maybe some local sponsorships, but honestly, she's going to be on a national stage just like she is for college. And if you take a look at it, I think it's pretty adjacent. Now, I mean, the biggest thing is that the viewership probably decreases, because right now she's on NBC with Peacock, she's on Fox, and she's on ESPN. So, you know, that does decrease going to the WNBA. But still, with ESPN as a big platform, I don't really see that as a massive issue. In terms of her staying in school, I mean, I believe what I saw, she's completed her 4 years of eligibility. There's that fifth year that's in question that she's electing to go into the WNBA draft. So to me, I don't know. I mean, how many championships has she won? I mean, that's the main thing, right? In terms of being this super legendary collegiate athlete, I mean, titles are a factor. I know Jason Williams got destroyed for saying that. And I do believe she is probably, I don't think that should take away in terms of her break, you know, being in a discussion as a top, elite basketball player in college hoops of all time. I don't know. I think you have to take a look at, you know, what happened in those runs and, you know, why didn't those titles occur? But, yeah, you know, winning the big dance is pretty difficult. I mean, that is really hard. And So to me, I don't know. I just think, to me, she should go to the pros. I don't know why there's this debate of she's going to be sacrificing money and all this. I think it's garbage. I think, look at what's happened with Sabrina Ionescu and Steph Curry. Look at the platform that she's gotten. And look at really the rising platform of this college basketball as well. And to me, if this Fox thing is true, I think it's desperate on their part. I mean,
oh yeah, 100%.
You can't get there. I mean, look at Juju Watkins. There's Paige Buckers. I mean, there's not other talent there. I mean, what are they doing for an admit? I mean, Shannon Sharp on First Take was right. Can you name a college basketball player separated from the Lobos? Can you name a college basketball player right now, men's, like, who's really even comparable to Caitlin Clark or Juju Watkins or Angel Reese? I don't think so. And so, yeah. Jimmy, her going to the pros, I think, is an obvious choice. And it's one of those things, I've said this on the show a million times. I think ESPN, I think they've improved their television coverage since the pandemic. But, you know, prior to that, they had been a poor partner. They've been a terrible partner for the WNBA in terms of hyping up the league. Because I made the comparison point to, I know people don't like this comparison, but I think it's apt, is with the UFC, a sport that's violent, a sport that, you know, had a bunch of baggage. But once they got signed with ESPN, bunch of features in terms of promoting the fighters, making sure that everybody knows about the fight nights, and they have flourished. And I think with the WNBA, you're starting to see that since the pandemic took place, of actually promoting the league, actually carrying out the highlights. And I think they still got a little bit more ways to go. I think there should be a WNBA today. I don't know why there's not. I think there's things that ESPN could do better in terms of promoting the women's game on a pro level. And I think Caitlin Clark can be the bridge to that, along with, you know, Angel Reach and Paige Buckers, and once, you know, Juju Watkins, whenever she decides to go to the league as well. I think that's going to usher in a new era in terms of promotion of this league. So I do think that's been an issue in terms of why the WNBA has lacked in publicity and just popularity, is because it's just not plugged more. I mean, take a look at the college game in terms of there's a college game day, games are on ABC. I mean, much more promoted in terms of throughout the years, even when I was younger, in terms of UConn and Tennessee compared to the WNBA. And so I know I've gone on to a long diatribe, but overall, I think she's making the right decision. Her staying in college, I don't think I'd be too against that. I think that, like you said, Matt, at least she gets to make money while she's, if she were to stay another year. So that's good for her. But, you know, going to the pros, I think, is ultimately the right choice for her. But, you know, if she were to stay another year in college, I don't think I'd be too upset about that either.
To your point, in terms of this timeline and what we're looking at, and I know we got to go. Caitlin Clark, when she broke the college basketball scoring record, it was higher viewed television than Victor Wembanyama's debut in the NBA.
Correct.
As hyped as he was.
Correct.
For so long on this show as well, because we were all hyped to see him play.
Of course.
Higher rated television. So with all due respect to the other women's players you listed who are great players, there's something about Caitlin Clark. She has an extra draw.
Yeah.
And it's going to be huge for the WNBA. Here's the other reason why, and this is my final point. TV deal is coming in 2025.
Excellent.
If Caitlin Clark gets in, gets drafted, you have a year with her under your belt in your league. Now you have all of a sudden, if she can get views when she's a little bit harder to access in terms of viewing the WNBA and compared to college sports right now, I mean, imagine what's going to happen. You know, TV companies, I mean, potentially are going to be just throwing money out, and then we can see a point in time where the WNBA is becoming profitable like we've never seen before, potentially.
Well, yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
For
it's
sure.
Not all because of her, but man, she has a lot of shine that she's going to bring onto the league. And I think a lot of people interested based on what we've seen from the college ratings of her games.
Well, she's one of the top sports stars in America now.
Yeah.
And I think the question is what happens with that NBA deal, because the NBA has plenty of stars and I think has momentum, but if they take a hit in terms of the money that they get, I think that's going to hurt the WNBA, despite how popular Caitlin Clark is, unfortunately. Because we saw with this, the WWE deal with Netflix, they're getting into the live programming game. You're already seeing a lot of these streamers, they're just jacking up prices because they don't have enough subscribers. So live sports is going to be that commodity. How much of a commodity, I don't know. And I think that's where things get interesting. But at the same time, it's kind of a slippery slope for these streamers too, because if they get rid of WNBA, that's another live, you know, portion that's not on your network. And I think, you know, a lot of these networks are feeling it now. So I think you're right, Matt. I think she's the ace in the hole. But again, just due to the state of streaming now, her impact might be minimalized just due to what's going on in terms of this, the streaming wars, at least from a signing a new TV deal standpoint. In terms of the league, I think she's going to flourish, and I think it's going to be awesome to see in these rivalries. I think she's going to be fantastic, especially for the Indiana Fever, a franchise that's, you know, has struggled as of late. It'll be nice to she can prop them up, and then you have more teams that are relevant in terms of just the popularity of just what's going on with this, their in-season tournament and the playoffs as well. So, we'll have to wait and see. It's going to be exciting, though. That's for sure.
Absolutely. We got to get out of here to actually go get into another great guest interview. Speaking of guest interviews, we just dropped Scott Howard Cooper today on the UCLA dynasty and some of the tenuous times behind the curtain there. Check that interview out if you haven't yet. You will enjoy that if you're a fan of the sport of basketball. We also had a great chat with Amit Mann from Toronto on the Toronto Raptors. A lot of great insight into like Grady Dick and his growth as a player. And we also had a recent interview with Coach Nick that I alluded to earlier that you will really enjoy.
A basketball breakdown.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. Basketball breakdown, YouTube fame, a lot of great X's and O's talks and some expectations for the last length of the season here. We got to run. He's Justin Goodrum. I'm Matt Thomas. Thank you so much for your support of the show. Take care. We'll see you soon. Peace out.
See you next time.
Thank you for listening to Hoopsology, presented by Boss Life. If you have comments or questions about this episode, please email hoopsologypod@gmail.com. Also, leave us a review on iTunes and follow us on all social media platforms.